Things you might know about Scotland is haggis, sheep, and moors. With something new around every corner, it surely isn't a bore.
Thank you for tuning in to Hannah and Eric Go Birding, a podcast by birders for birders.
I'm Hannah and he's Eric.
We created this podcast to share adventures, sometimes misadventures, and opinions that we have on different birding topics. We're definitely not experts, and anything that we discuss that might be controversial, I want you to remember, they're our own opinions, and they might be different from yours.
So, I feel like we're kind of in that summer lull.
Yeah, for activity. I mean, it's kind of, every day is kind of the same thing right now in Clatsop County, except for the white-tailed kites that just suddenly showed up out of nowhere the other day.
I did see migrating shorebirds the other day, too.
Yeah. So, I'm going to take your sentence back and walk it back a little bit. There's still stuff going on.
No, I revoke it. You're right.
you're revoked. There's stuff going on. It's the summer, but you have to be more imaginative about what you're...
Yeah, okay. Sorry. What you're saying. Sorry, bad
I mean, we have tufted puffins that are doing their thing.
We've talked about that every single time.
Well, then I won't talk about it.
Okay, we can let it go.
Yeah, we'll let it go. But it's getting to the middle of the summer, so we're basically... Everyone that's familiar with fall migration in the U.S. knows that shorebird migration starts right when spring migration ends.
Yeah, basically. Pretty much. It seems like it.
Yeah, so they're already starting to move. The shorebirds are already starting to move. We're getting relatively large flocks here on the West Coast of peeps. So we've got the Western sandpipers, the Lee sandpipers, the sanderlings, all these little dudes that are just kind of moving along the coast in fairly large flocks, like 50 to 100.
So then we can expect the weird godwits to show up
any day now.
Any day now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. Okay. We can expect anything we want. Exactly. I think that's what we're allowed to do.
So just one piece of news. We did want to mention that there was a tragic death in the birding community recently. Mm-hmm. We didn't know the individual, but had, you know, just dozens of mutual friends, and I know everyone had so much respect for Tom Johnson. Unfortunately, we never had the opportunity to meet him, but, you know, we just kind of became aware of who he was through passing of, you know, the entire birding community. Yeah. So we're so, you know, sorry to hear about the loss of someone who was such a giant in the community, and to those who are impacted by the loss, we're, you know, our hearts are with you all. Even though we may have not known him, you know, I'm sure we felt the impact
of what he's done for the birding community.
Exactly. Yeah. So, raise a glass if you get a chance to Tom Johnson.
Okay. So Hannah, you had a couple episodes come out the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So in July, we're getting right to the end of July. I've mentioned this before, but I had an interview with Aaliyah from Birds Caribbean. They came out on July 6th on the Women Birders Happy Hour. And then on July 20th, I had an episode of the Bird Nerd Book Club come out with Marilyn Simmons, who told me all about her amazing book, Woman Watching. So I encourage you to check out both those podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you so much.
Awesome. So we are also, we're going to do a little bit of traveling coming up. Some of it's not really traveling. Wings Over Willapa we're doing in just over a month now, in September. It's not really travel because it's only one county away, but it's a super cool small festival that's put on by the Friends of Willapa Bay National Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah, so that'll be a lot of fun.
So we'll be up there in September for that. The Rio Grande Valley Birding Festival, we just got some information about what field trips are being assembled and all that stuff for us.
Good time as always.
So I'm super excited for that. In the beginning of November, the International Conference for Women Birders in Uganda is coming up in December, at the end of this year, December. So tentatively, still got our fingers crossed that things will work out for that. San Diego Bird Festival in February, Spring Chirp in April. I meant to say spring, not May. In April of next year, and then Hannah's got a super cool thing she's
doing. I'm really excited. Yeah, and I've mentioned it a couple times, but heading to Brazil to join the Amazon Birding Expedition Brazil for Women, and that's with Birding is the World Brazil. So if you'd like to join me and a bunch of other amazing women birders for a trip through Brazil, please check out that website and consider joining us, and that'll be in September of 2024.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing, that we know for sure that we're doing over the next full year. But other things might pop up. Might find some other cool stuff to do.
Sure, of course. So that brings us to our July Bird Nerd giveaway. So this is when we announce the winner of our giveaway. And so what we asked you to do was tell us a funny bird or birding story. And the randomly selected winner will win a Hannah and Eric Go Birding hat.
Yeah, so we read through the stories. What was the winner? I did not keep track of our Excel spreadsheet this month.
So our randomly selected winner was Bronwyn, and she told us the story that goes. A couple of weeks ago, I went down to the local nursery forgetting it's not open on Mondays. It's in a rural area not far out of town. Seeing the gate was closed, I turned around, driving onto a grassy area outside the gate. It's been very wet, and before I knew it, it was bogged. I called for a tow truck, and while waiting, I got out of my car to look over into the paddock beside the nursery, and to my delight, I spotted a Pacific heron, a lifer for me. If I hadn't got bogged, I wouldn't have got the new bird, so despite my plight, I was thrilled. I've got photos of my bogged car if you'd like to see them. No photo of the Pacific heron, though. Great story, Bronwyn. I feel like many of us have probably had similar circumstances.
Yeah, and I feel like normally when situations like that happen, you end up with more photos of the bogged car or of your broken shoe or of whatever it is than you do of the exciting, cool thing that you found.
Well, sure. Of course, you never have your DSLR in the right place at the right time.
You're just pulling your phone out and you're like, oh, look at this silly. What did I do? And then you end up not taking a photo, and then you just have a cool story.
So congratulations, Bronwyn, for being our random winner. And yeah. We will get in touch with you so we can get your hat. And then we'll have another Bird Nerd giveaway in August. So yes, tune in to our next episode for that. So today we have brought you all here to tell us about our trip to Scotland.
I feel like I've been brought into the principal's office.
A little bit.
I've brought you here to talk about.
Do you want to tell me what you did?
In my own words?
Yeah, before I tell you. So anyways, our bird trip here, we were heading to Global Bird Fair, which is in the UK, just about 3 hours north of London or so.
Yeah. It's literally the smack dab middle of England.
Basically.
So there's a relatively close airport there, East Midlands Airport. We flew into it last year. We decided we wanted to do some more adventuring this year, so we didn't fly into the closest airport. We flew in a little bit further away, just so we could get some driving in and see some more of the landscape and the whole area.
And there was a reasonably priced flight going from Portland to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
So that was another reason why we selected that one.
Because price matters. Yeah. Whatever we can find is cheapest.
We're not made of money. So anyways, our deal was that we were flying into Edinburgh, and then we were going to spend a day or two there and explore. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about it in a past couple episodes, asking for suggestions of things that we should do. Mm-hmm. And you all came in for us and gave us some great suggestions. So we did take those under advisement when we were planning our trip. But anyways, we flew out of Portland to Seattle, had a delay in Seattle, which caused us to have a delay when we reached Paris. So
the delay caused us to miss the flight. So we got a new flight, which was 6 hours later, five hours later.
It was 7 hours.
7 hours
that
later.
We sat in Paris.
Yeah, so lots of delays ended up being that we ended up not getting our half day that we expected right then in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it is what it is. Flying during the summer has its risks. I feel like flying all the time now has its risks.
I do too, but I feel like the summer is usually more bogged down with issues happening.
Yeah, but that's all to say. I mean, We built in buffer days just in case, anyways.
Well, and we also got there safely.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we didn't
lose any luggage. Nothing was broken.
Yeah, no major issues. So I have to keep reminding myself of that.
And I only had to pay once for that rental car.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I checked my credit card. They only charged me once.
Nice.
It's good.
Okay, so we were supposed to arrive there at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Didn't get in until midnight. And then we drove over to our hotel, which is about 20, 30 minutes or so.
Something like that, yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know a whole lot about the Royal Mile. I selected a hotel on the Royal Mile because it was like, you know, that seemed to be the thing to do.
Yeah.
And so we selected one. It was called, I think it's called Motel One, Royal or something like that.
Yeah.
And
it had like one of those generic names. Like,
yeah.
Just very generic. But it's the building itself was not a generic building at all.
No, it was a really beautiful building.
It's just a generic name.
And it ended up being really funny about how to get to our room, that we had to like go up to the fifth floor and then wander around to another elevator, go down a floor, and then like go through a glass hallway that went over a pathway.
Yeah. To then go back up a floor.
Yeah. So that was funny.
And to get into, because the only way to get between the two buildings was on one floor. It was like, it was a maze to get there.
Anyways, so the Royal Mile, if you stay, this is Hannah's travel tip number one. If you stay on there, there's like no parking lots for any of the hotels. And yeah. There are two, I think it's two major parking lots for the Royal Mile that are like public, I mean paid parking lots or parking garages. So we had to park in one of those and then trek like a half a mile to get to our hotel,
mm-hmm.
which I, you know, didn't, I mean, I read that, but I didn't really conceptualize it.
It didn't feel like that far, though. I mean, I'm sure it was a half mile. I'm positive that it was a full half mile away, but it honestly didn't feel that bad, considering that we were in a downtown area for a historic city, and it was a Q Park, is what the facility was called, and it was rather large too. There was like six floors.
Oh yeah,
like all underground, just kept going and going and going and going, but. Like, it seemed rather convenient, even though we had to carry our stuff a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, take that for what it's worth.
So anyways, we got into the hotel, got car parked and everything, and then, we've probably mentioned this just offhanded, but we're taking Spanish, and we're doing that online, mm-hmm. Through a community college here in Oregon. And so we had a class at 2:30 in the morning in Scotland.
It's normally a 6:30 p.m. for us, so it's getting close to the end of our workday, Tuesdays and Thursdays. So it's like, okay, not a big deal. We just take class, and it's good. But because we moved over nine time zones or whatever over to Scotland, over to GMT, all of a sudden it's now at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and our teacher is very strict. Like we can't really miss a class. So
I wouldn't want to miss any classes anyways.
Well,
I feel like we're paying a lot of money to try to learn Spanish. So you do what you can to put in all the effort that you
to
learn what you want to learn.
So anyways, we had our class from 2:30 to 4:30, set mm-hmm. our alarms for like 6:30, and we're like, okay, we're just going to
get a quick nap.
Yeah, quick nap, and then we will like get some coffee and hit the road and start birding. And then at 11
a.m. The next thing I knew, the fire alarm for the hotel was going off, and I looked at my clock, and it was 11 a.m.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, golly. But it was like a test of the fire alarm. It wasn't like a full fire alarm.
Well,
it just went, meh, 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 and that was it.
I appreciate they did that, though.
Yeah, it was so weird. But that's what woke us up, and we had scheduled for that day a boat trip out to Bass Rock. And so we were like, okay, cool. We'll do this trip to Bass Rock. Our plan was we would kind of bird our way over to the port and then get on the boat, go do the ride around, which we'll talk about Bass Rock in a moment, but do the ride around the Bass Rock and then spend the rest of the afternoon birding.
Yeah.
And what it turned out to be is 11 o'clock came. We're jumping out of bed, throwing clothes on as fast as we can, trying to put our scope together, trying to put our camera together, get everything out of our bags, because everything was still in our bags. We hadn't even unpacked anything at all.
Racing over to the car.
Literally running to the car, which it was rather convenient, but it was still a half mile away.
Yeah.
Running over to the car, grabbing it, and then trying to navigate getting out of the city to then drive up to where the place, where we were supposed to catch the boat. And the boat was supposed to leave at 12:15.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting, like, we were almost there. We were, like, pulling into the town, and then they were calling us, like, hey, are you guys coming?
Well, I emailed them, I Facebooked them, I Instagrammed them. Mm-hmm. I tried to do anything I could to like get a hold of them to tell them like, hey, we're trying to come, you know, can we like delay this?
We're trying to do everything except for call, because we don't have calling on our phones. We do technically. I mean, it ends up costing a lot of money, but we get free data and free text. So it's like, okay, well, as much free data and text as we can possibly use. So we're trying to use all those means to try to contact them. And then they called us. And it was like, well, I guess we're just going to answer and see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll deal with the consequences later.
So I think we arrived about 15 minutes late just for the boat ride.
Just barely. Yeah. And we probably pulled into the town or pulled right into the port, but we couldn't find parking.
Yeah, well,
if we would have been able to just pull right to the parking and walk down, we might have been able to make it. But man, it was close. It was close. And I felt like, I don't know how we ended up that close with how late we woke up.
I know. Because it was like a good hour drive.
Oh, yeah. It was a solid hour drive. But yeah, so we missed the boat. Didn't make it. Though they had an opening for the next day. And we talked to the gals at the desk, and they were very nice. And the operation that runs this is
it's the Scottish Seabird Center.
Yeah. So they're a nonprofit. They when you pay this, it's essentially a donation that's partially paying for
the cost
of the trip, and then partially is a donation to this nonprofit that's working on seabird research.
Sure.
So I felt bad. I felt stupid that we had paid for one boat trip. But then I didn't feel that bad about paying. I just chalked it up to a donation.
Like, yeah, yeah, and it really...
They're not that expensive to go on this trip.
Well, especially for what you get. Yeah. It's really not that much.
Yeah, so I didn't feel that bad for paying for a second trip for the next day and making sure I set more alarms for the next day.
So anyways, we kind of just dinked around the Scottish Seabird Center because they have like a really nice cafe and uh-huh. like a little gift store. And they've
got these cameras set up that point at the colony. From different points.
Like, if you go down to the Discovery
Center. Yeah, if you go down to the Discovery Center, which there's a fee. It's kind of like a museum underneath the whole gift shop area. It's just super cool.
Yeah, but we wandered out to kind of the edge of the headland that's right there. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, rock pigeon, common wood pigeon. But we also got some great seabirds too, like black-headed gull, herring gull, sandwich tern, great cormorant. We got our lifer European shag. And then also our lifer rock pipit, which we kind of agonized over for a few minutes about like, oh, what's this going to be?
It's a pipit, but which pipit?
Well, the only options were meadow, I think, and rock. Yeah. And it was definitely not a meadow pipit. And if you looked at Merlin, I mean, that was like literally the description of a rock pipit is like a pipit that walks around on like headlands yeah. and rocky outcroppings.
Well, and then the shag, for those that are not our non-European audience, our Pacific Northwest audience, it looks like a neotropic, or a mix between a neotropic cormorant and a pelagic cormorant. It's kind of got the longish tail. It's got a really thin bill. And some of them, none of the ones I saw had that fancy hairdo.
Well, it was probably too late in the season for them.
It might have been, yeah. But kind of a cormorant-y bird that's really thin-billed. Just like a pelagic cormorant or a neotropics. So kind of a really cool bird flying around. There was a handful of them. I think I only ended up putting one on the list because I was still out of it. Still not fully awake yet, I guess. I don't know.
We had plenty of coffee.
Oh, so much coffee.
So we cut our losses and told them we'll see you tomorrow.
They weren't losses, though. We got two lifers.
That's true. We did. And then we headed off to actually do some birding. And we have a listener that had reached out to us, mm-hmm. Sean, who just moved to Edinburgh recently. And
yeah, we met him at a festival that we went to, the Rio Grande Valley Birding Festival.
Yeah.
Met him, talked to him pretty extensively there, and then when we said we were going to Scotland, he was like, oh, I just moved to Scotland. You need to come bird with me. And so it's like, oh, heck yeah.
So anyways, we were in touch with Sean, and Sean suggested that maybe we hit this one hot spot that wasn't too far away, the Faseni Cottage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we weren't really sure what to expect, but I saw looking at eBird that they had ring ouzel recently. And that is a bird that for some reason I have just always wanted to see. So we headed over there and Sean was going to meet us along the way. And when we were getting there, it was kind of like driving through, I felt like Paramo. Like it was just high grasslands.
It's just hills. So it is like quintessential. Like when you like if you just go to Google and just type in Scottish Hills, mm-hmm. or Scotland, like that was literally what we were driving through. Like the picturesque, like rolling hills, grass, random spots of wildflowers every once in a while.
Overcast and sheep.
Little little creeks kind of every once in a while, which we learned some fancy words, fancy Scottish words for all the different bodies of water. But all of that stuff, it was the most picturesque Scottish countryside you can imagine.
Well, and just very few cars driving through.
Oh yeah. Like nobody out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was absolutely beautiful.
Oh yeah.
As Eric portrayed for us. So to get there, we were headed on the normal highway. And yeah, then,
just up and down over these hills.
And then we kind of just followed our GPS to where it said we should be, down some super steep gravel road.
Yeah, there was no sign. There was no nothing. It just was like a gravel road. And it was like, okay, well, I guess we just follow it because the GPS says that's where we're going. We'll give it a shot.
And so at the base of it was this cottage and a little barn right next to a creek. So we figured, you know. This has got to be it.
This has got to be it. He said, Fastenee Cottage. Yeah, so we ended up down at the cottage. That's what Sean said, cottage. So it's like, okay, this has got to be it. This has got to be the cottage because it's a cottage.
Well, and there was an eBird hotspot there.
Exactly, yeah. So we're down there. Nobody was there yet. It was just kind of us. So we just kind of parked out of the way off the road and then just hopped out, started kind of wandering back and forth a little bit. We had no cell phone service down there. So
absolutely not.
It was at the bottom of a little canyon area, bottom of some hills.
Well, and there had been a white-throated dipper spotted there recently, and so we were looking for that. So we just walked up and down that creek looking for the dipper.
Yeah, killing some time, which we didn't have very much time to kill. It was 10 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
Before another car started coming down the road, which happened to be Sean.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool meeting Sean again. He's a two-countryer now.
Yeah, right. So it was so much fun to have Sean guide us around. So he got out of the car and we started heading down towards downstream of the cottage. And
yeah, it was east. Southeast. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. And there were, what surprised me was a couple of East Eurasian oyster catchers were flying around.
So vocal.
Hollering at us. And, you know, I get that oyster catchers are different from place to place, but our black oyster catchers that we have here on the coast, like, I would never expect to see one not at the tide line.
Yeah, like, the rack line is about as high up as I've ever seen a black oyster catcher.
So
I've never seen one leave where the ground wasn't still salty.
Yeah, so it was just super weird to see one in like this, I don't know, I'm going to say glen. It's probably not the appropriate term for it. But just alongside the stream, it was really unusual. And, you know, I was wondering if they had a nest around there. And that's why they were being so, like, vocal. Because it really seemed like it was trying to lead us away from it.
Oh, yeah. They were running around. Like, we never saw any baby birds or nests or anything like that. But
yeah,
there had to have been one somewhere in that vicinity. Yeah, so while we're walking along, Sean gave us a little bit of an education on bodies of water in Scotland. And the body of water that we were next to there, I would just call it a creek or a stream or something like that. But in Scotland, because there's so many, and this is something I looked up afterwards also to find more information about, because there's so many bodies of water, it's kind of like how up north, the Inuit have so many different words for types of ice and snow. And in Oregon, we have so many different types of words for the way it's raining.
Yeah.
In Scotland, they have lots of different words for different bodies of water, different moving bodies of water. So this one that we were next to is referred to as a burn. It's a small stream that's kind of like it's bigger than a tributary to a stream, but it's small, I guess. And there's other ones, glens, grains, pows, stanks for ponds, sykes. There's lots and lots of other words that I never even considered that you would need that many words for a moving body of water or a non-moving body of water, like a pond.
Well, and the actual name for that burn was Fastenee water.
Yeah.
Which I always think it's interesting that they use the term like water
yeah.
for like a stream or something like that.
Yeah. So lots of interesting words that I can't wait to like start adding some of this stuff into my regular vocabulary.
You're going to confuse so many people.
Oh my gosh. So many people.
You see that burn over there?
The what? Yeah. So thank you, Sean, for helping us learn a little bit more about the Scottish countryside and what's going on out there ecologically and linguistically.
And it was just so pleasant to walk, you know, alongside this burn and have the oyster catchers, of course, screaming at us, but sheep, you know, just like out of arm's reach. And we, I don't know, walked maybe like a quarter of a mile or something like that. Along. And there was a little path that kind of went along the base of the ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a hill that, I mean, we were in a valley, essentially, in between, like, two hillsides.
Yeah.
Not a super deep valley or anything like that, but...
It was part of these rolling hills.
Yeah.
It was at the bottom of a rolling hill,
yeah. Exactly. And up ahead of us, there were carrion crows that were cawing around and common ravens. There was Eurasian wrens that were singing from the bushes. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really pleasant... you know, sight. And before we, before Sean got there, I like took a picture of myself like out birding there. And I was thinking like, you know, I never knew that I needed to bird in a place like this until I'm standing here and I'm just enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
And all I can see besides, you know, Eric is the sheep in the distance. And it was just, I don't know, it was so pleasant. It was like when we were in Sweden,
yeah.
You know, just being out in the middle of nowhere. And of course, this place has been used for millennia by people. And so it's like not in a natural state at all. But it's just, I don't know, it's beautiful and pleasant.
Yeah, it's very nice out there. Yeah, so with Sean, we're walking along and like the objective was ring ouzel.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the main objective. Like, what? How can we find these? And then the white-throated dipper. Like, those are the two things we were really, really hoping for. And then we had a couple birds, looked like blackbirds, hopping up and down. And Hannah got on them, and she was like, these have a white ring.
Well, actually, at first I was like, if I was in the States, I would call this a black Phoebe.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
true.
And Sean was like, I haven't birded enough in the States to know that. but they, yeah, I mean, they're, so ring ouzels are like, I don't know, the size of an American robin.
Yeah.
Or it's, so, like, it's a fairly good sized bird.
Eurasian blackbird sized, it's the same sort of concept.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's thrush shaped and it's all black except for it has a white patch on its throat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, to me, it kind of looks like a black Phoebe, especially the way it was moving around the bushes.
Yeah. Well, and their bill is yellow, but it's not like the bright yellow that you get on a blackbird.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like you've got some yellow, but it's that white band for the males, the white band across the throat and chest that rings around it is super distinctive and sticks out. And also their very skittishness stuck out pretty good too. They would not let us get within 500 feet or so. They, like, we saw it down the line, and then we would like walk 5 feet and it would move 5 feet further. And then we'd walk 5 more feet and it would hop 5 more feet. And then it turned out that there was a whole flock of them. There was three or four of them or
so. Yeah, like a family group of them.
Yeah. So that was super cool. So target achieved. We were like, oh, this is so cool. This is awesome.
Well, and then after we'd, you know, gotten kind of our fill of that, Eric looked up the hill and there was this big bird. I mean, it almost looked like a female pheasant or something that flew out of a tree and it plopped down into like some brush.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were trying to describe to Sean like what we had seen. And I was thinking like, oh, it's got to be the ptarmigan,
mm-hmm.
or the female ptarmigan. And it eventually came out that it was a missel thrush.
Which,
you know, is just so bizarre, like the diversity of thrushes in the old world. You know, we only have a couple thrushes,
mm-hmm.
and they're all pretty similar to one another, but like missel thrushes are like really pot-bellied.
Yeah,
they're larger,
seriously.
And they're an interesting bird. So that was a little disappointing that's what it was. You know, I'm always trying to make it a zebra.
Always looking for the zebra, not the horse.
Yeah. So we started walking back to the cars because it was getting to be about that time. And Sean gave us a great education on access in Scotland to properties.
Yeah, which if anybody remembers back to our episode about Sweden and when we were traveling through around the Sweden, Denmark, Norway, that area, the laws in Scotland are fairly recent. I think it was 2003 is what I found, the land access act that was passed. But it's very similar to what we discussed back in Sweden, that as long as you're being responsible, not being a jerk, and not invading someone's direct privacy, that you have it's colloquially referred to as the freedom to roam, but it's a lot more complicated and nuanced than just freedom to roam. But you have access, unlike in the States, you can go out and go bird on property. You can go hike through property, whether it be private or public, as long as you're being respectful, not throwing trash, not like all within reason. There's a set of guidelines like with anything. And so it was kind of interesting because what we were on, was private property of some sort. And that's Sean was pointing out that we're on private property. This is owned by whoever owns that that cottage there. Mm-hmm. But we can be here. We can wander around as long as we're not going inside their fence that's sure. right around their house. As long as we're not trying to take stuff from their land or anything like that. Just out there enjoying it, non-consumptively recreating on their property. It's all good to go. So that was great to hear.
Yeah, and then as we were kind of in the middle of that conversation, we noticed a bird walking up the hillside.
A big floop-a-loop.
Yeah.
Is that what you'd refer to?
I don't know if I would classify it as such.
Big, partridge-y, like, ptarmigan-y bird that is big and round.
Yeah. So Sean told us, you know, it's a red grouse, and yeah. I was like flipping through Merlin trying to figure out what a red grouse is, because that does not come up on my
different
Merlin.
Different taxonomies.
Yeah, so it eventually we figured out that it was a willow ptarmigan.
Yeah.
So we got a second lifer at that location.
Completely unexpected, had no idea. We continued to search it. We got that guy, and even though we got two, it was not the two we were hoping for, but it was two that we got. So
Ring Ouzel was something I
was
really
hoping for.
Yeah,
that was one we were hoping for, but we never ended up seeing a white-throated dipper, which
no.
we walked up, but then the rain kind of chased us back. So
yeah.
the whole time we were over in the UK this year, it was rain, sun, rain, sun, rain, sun. It was like the weather, like what we expect here in Oregon at home.
Well, and when we were sitting out there, like just chatting with Sean, walking back to the cars, there was lightning on the hillside,
true, yeah.
which I thought was kind of unusual. I mean, it's higher up than Oregon is. It was, I think I figured out it's like 55 degrees
of latitude
north.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're at 45 where we're at. And, you know, it's just super uncommon to have thunder and lightning in our region.
In our area, yeah.
And so,
and if you do have it, it's usually behind clouds, and it's just, you really just get thunder.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty unusual. Somebody can probably correct me on that, but it's, you know, Sean seemed excited about it.
Yeah, he seemed excited about it, so I mean, yeah. I thought it was kind of cool, so.
Yeah.
But we were getting into the cars, because we were like, yeah, let's get inside the cars.
Let's not play this game.
Yeah, let's move it along.
Well, and we had to get back to Edinburgh, too. Sean had graciously invited us to dinner with a couple of folks in the Scottish birding community, and so we wanted to make sure to get back in time for that. And it was at a fantastic restaurant called Maker's Mash, which actually ended up only being a few hundred steps away from our hotel.
Literally a few hundred steps.
Yes, because we walked there, and it was up this set of stairs that's called the New Steps, which is 124 steps, and it's a shortcut between Old and New Edinburgh. And this is something that, you know, we didn't get to spend as much time in Edinburgh as I'd like to. We didn't get to explore the castle at all. We didn't go to any real museums or anything that I wanted to do.
Next time.
Exactly. But anyways, one of the things that I really enjoyed was all these little passageways through the area. And we went through another one after dinner that was called Craig's Close.
Yeah.
And it's just a like this narrow step, you know, passageway in between two buildings to get from one street to another. And it's just such a like a old city sort of feel and vibe in these places.
Like, yeah, kind of these like alleyways that are like 4.5 feet wide.
Well, it's like when we were in Tallinn, you know, in Estonia, and we went through a couple of those passageways too. And I keep seeing pictures online of one, I can't remember where it is, but it's a one-way at a time passageway through between buildings. That there's like a stoplight
for people.
Yeah, there's a stoplight because it's so narrow, so you have to like wait for the other person to get through before you can go. But it's just
was much wider. It was way wider than that.
I mean,
it was like 4 feet wide.
Yeah,
3 feet wide maybe.
But it's just so it's something that you don't really see, you know, in the U.S. ever that I can think of, because our cities just weren't created in a time where
Most of our cities were designed around cars.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and so you didn't have to have these little passageways to get from, you know, your house down to the next street or whatever with all your breads to sell or whatever the case is going to be at that time.
Yeah.
So I found that really interesting and charming, and I would like to explore Edinburgh more.
Yeah, for sure. So we went up these 124 steps, up the new steps to the restaurant. We got some delicious dinner. It was awesome. Had a couple local beers. I don't remember. I got an IPA of some sort.
Yeah, you got an IPA.
But it was good. It was like their, I think it described it as hop forward, heavy hops or something like that. Yeah. And it was interesting to see the distinction between what Scottish heavy hops is described as, yeah, and what it's described. Like, it was definitely an IPA, but it kind of was more of like almost towards a lager sort of level of hops. So it was kind of interesting, but it was still a really good beer.
Yeah.
And I got haggis. I got my one and only sample of haggis, which Maker's Mash was a rather fancy restaurant. It was kind of like sit down and have like a nice fancy meal. It wasn't like going into like a gross pub and just like ordering just whatever, which I feel like we need to do still.
Oh, sure.
But it was kind of fancier and nicer, and the food was delicious. But the haggis was not anything to turn your nose up at. It was good.
Yeah, and I had a boar sausage and cheese and chive mash. It was delicious. And fun conversation with everyone there. So, Sean, thank you so much for asking us out and for, you know, generously taking care of us on our mm-hmm. trip to Edinburgh. It was so fun to see you again, and it was great learning more about the Scottish birding community.
Yeah.
So the next day was the day that we were actually going to make the boat trip.
And we did. We made it. We set our alarms. We woke up on time. We didn't miss the boat. We didn't miss our birding in the morning. We headed out. We got out fairly early. It was not super early, but it's relatively early. And we went out first to Musselboro. There was the mouth of a river that's been having a king eider hang out.
I believe it's called the Esk.
The Esk mouth?
Mouth, right. Yeah. And yeah, like Eric mentioned, that they've had a king eider that was being seen there. Mm-hmm. And we were hoping to... I feel so silly chasing a bird, like, when we're in a foreign place like that. Because, you know, like, there's so much new stuff. It's like, I'm chasing this one thing.
But a lot of times, chase locations... Sometimes they're not, but a lot of times they're just really good hotspots anyway.
That's true.
So you see like, oh, and this was a really good hotspot. You go to the Esk mouth and it's...
There were like...
Shorebirds galore.
And dozens of mute swans.
Yeah. So it was a good birding location and no king eider. Looked around. We've had lots and lots of common eiders out there, but we couldn't find any... common eider that didn't look like a common eider.
Yeah. Yeah, we had Eurasian skylarks calling behind us. There was a really
beautiful calls.
There was a like a levee around a pond that was kind of behind us, mm-hmm. and then the mouth of the river, and then the ocean in front of us.
Yeah.
And so it's really beautiful location to be at. There's a lot of people walking dogs and biking. So it's a very common like place for people to recreate.
Oh yeah.
But we, yeah, like Eric mentioned, we had the eiders and we had mute swans. We had the one velvet scoter, which apparently is already reported as a regular at that site, but it's unusual. So that was fun to be able to scope that one out. Mergansers, tons of oyster catchers, curlews, lots of shorebirds to poke through, and actually gave us use of our scope for once. So that was fun too. And then way off in the distance, like at the interchange of waters, there were a lot of gannets.
Yeah.
But not to the level of gannets that we were preparing ourselves for.
That we were prepared to enjoy, yeah.
And behind us, you know, like I mentioned, we had the skylarks, but we also had linnets, which was fun. Hadn't seen those in a long time. Yeah. Goldfinches, wagtails. Yeah. So that was a really good spot and stop. I wish we would have gotten the king eider, but, you know, it is what it is.
But despite not getting the king eider, we had all that other cool stuff. So it was absolutely worth the stop, especially for early morning because of the direction that everything faces. You get the sun to your back when you first walk out to the mouth of the river.
Mm-hmm.
The sun's to your back, so you get really good light on everything. So it's not the squinting into the sun. It's probably, I would think, if the tide worked out great for us, but that's the ideal time to go, I think, to that location.
Yeah. So from there we headed on to North Berwick, which was where we were going out for the boat ride at mm-hmm. the Scottish Seabird Center. And so we got on the boat, which the initial trip that we were supposed to go on was like an 8-person rubber raft sort of situation with motor.
Yeah, it's one of the hard ribbed, what is it called now? Zodiacs. It's a Zodiac. That's what you were supposed to go out in a Zodiac, and kind of go around a rather small boat, kind of choppy. You're out there really exposed to the elements.
Eric had his scopolamine patch.
I had my motion sickness patch ready to go. But the trip that they had available for the day that we went was a big catamaran. So mm-hmm. it barely even moved. It's smooth in the water. No issues at all.
And our first stop out was Craigleith, mm-hmm. which is an island that's just right out from North Berwick. And
the closest rock that you can see from the port.
And that one, we had 250 common murres. We had razor bills all over the place, Atlantic puffins. They were landing in the water, like, right in front of us. We were on the back of the boat, so we got a great look at all these birds that were just, like, right in front of us on the water.
You can reach out and grab them.
I know.
Yeah, so super close. Little cute guys.
Hundreds of black-legged kittiwakes that were nesting along the cliffside that we went around. Mm-hmm. It was just absolutely spectacular look at some of these seabirds. Yeah.
Lots more shags, lots more great cormorants, a handful of gannets, but not that many yet. We're on Craigleith, there wasn't that many, but they were flying around. And then the main event was after that. So it was pretty
like,
much
what, like a 20-minute motor out to Bass Rock minutes, from there.
Yeah. Fairly it was a little bit choppy, but it wasn't too bad getting out to it, and the wind was not as bad as it was the day before, so maybe blessing in disguise that we didn't have the heavy winds. But we get out there, and, like, I think, Hannah, you posted a video on Instagram and on TikTok of what the gannets flying around. Like, it was a cloud of gannets flying around this rock. The rock itself, every square inch of it was covered in gannets. I mean, there was other birds, too, but it was just bird life after bird life. After so much birds on this rock. It was so cool. What did they say? It was 150,000 pairs of gannets nest on this rock. It's the world's largest breeding colony for northern gannets.
Yeah. And actually, the interesting thing about it is that gannets, I'm going to have to look it up real quick. Gannets, their scientific name is Morus bassanus. And it's actually that second part of it, bassanus, mm-hmm. is named for Bass Rock. Because that's where the largest colony of them were. But just a real fascinating history with Bass Rock. It's part of the Firth of Forth, which we mentioned a couple episodes ago.
It was part of your song.
Yeah, when I was trying to find a word to rhyme. And it just ended up being that. And this rock has just so much fascinating history on it. It was bought by, a family in 1706. But before that, it was settled and had a hermit individual that lived on it, and there was a castle and a lighthouse and a jail and this antique, ruins of a church up on the hill. It's just absolutely fascinating, this stuff. I mean, even the birds were cool and everything, but like the history of this rock was just amazing.
Well, and there was so much history, and if you go out there, you can take the trip that we took that goes around the rock. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other trips that go around the rock. There's one that you can book that's an excursion where you land and then you go walk the rock, and I assume there's quite a bit more history that you learn while you're on that foot tour. But it is intense. I found the chapel thing fascinating. That So one of the most fascinating stories that I thought there, I mean, there was tons of fascinating stories, but they're telling us on the boat that there was a family living on the rock for whatever reason. I'm not sure why they were on the rock, but they were on the rock and they wanted to go to church. And there was, in order to go to church, they had to get off the rock. They had to take a boat in to then go to the nearest church. And so then they wrote to the Pope and said, "Hey, everyone on this island wants a church. We want a church out here." And the Pope, without having, this is the story they told us, without having actually visited it, said, "Well, yeah, if everyone wants it, let's do it. So let's invest the money." So then they built it, and they literally built a church for a small family. A priest ended up out on this island just for this one family, their own private church, essentially.
Could you imagine how mad he was?
I know. It was back in like the 1300s or something. So it wasn't like there was somebody, the Pope had time to go up there and put eyes on this location to determine that, okay, this is a good idea or not a good idea. He had to just kind of assume that he was being asked for it reasonably.
Yeah.
And so then he invested the money. They went out there and built a church out on this rock for a family. which is fascinating. But there was so much other history. Like,
yeah,
entire boat ride, the guide was just story after story after story. And I'm sure there was a lot of missing stories that we either didn't catch because we were busy staring at Gannets, or...
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I feel bad because I wasn't really paying that close of attention to what she was saying, because mm-hmm. I was just so in awe of all the Gannets that were Gannets around us. And, you know, they were... The first spot that we got to, they were just like at eye level, you know, maybe 50 feet away from us. And you could watch them do their courtship behaviors. Mm-hmm. And it's just absolutely incredible. And one of the things that she told us that was really interesting is that, you know, avian flu had hit the colony really hard. And one of the things they noticed about the survivor individuals mm-hmm. of Northern Gannets is that their eye color was changing. And so it's typically blue, but in individuals that have been immune to it or have been exposed and survived. Yeah. Their pupils were changing. So they were black. So it's not, it's such an odd, you know, thing that has happened. And so the person was like saying that, oh, you have this relationship with this bird, and all of a sudden it's got like devil eyes to it.
Well, and it's, I was taking photos of the Gannets as much as possible while we were there. And I'm still going to have to go through, I haven't had a chance to go through all of my photos yet, but I want to see if I can find Gannets with blue eyes and Gannets without blue eyes, because the ones that I kind of cursorily looked at had blue eyes, so I want to see if I can find some without blue eyes, because I thought that was, the whole thing was fascinating, that something in the genetics, that either in their genetics that they're able to survive it, or something changed with the way their body processes melanin or whatever, mm-hmm. so that their eye color changes had to do with avian flu. So in Things like avian flu are decimating to populations, to colonies that are like this, because you're literally, every single bird is one wingspan away from another bird.
Yeah.
And that's it. You have thousands upon thousands of birds that are all within one wingspan of each other. So if a disease comes, a communicable disease, it can run rampant through a colony like that so fast. So... But there's lots of birds.
Yeah, there were. That boat trip was absolutely incredible. I mean, you don't see a ton of species. Like, we had 9 on that one specific island.
On that checklist, on Bass Rock.
On Bass Rock itself. But it was just absolutely amazing to be surrounded by that many birds mm-hmm. all flying above you. You know, I would love to be there during, like, feeding time.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
Well, and we were there... at the end of the season, basically. Mm-hmm. So there was the Gannets. They were saying the Gannets kind of stick around longer than most of the other birds, but a lot of the Puffins had already left. A lot of the Razorbills, a lot of the Common Murres or the Common Guillemots, they had already left for the season. So their numbers were much lower than what their peak was. But you could just imagine, like, a month earlier or a month and a half earlier, like going into like June, end of May, something like that, and just like adding 20%, adding mm-hmm. 15%, whatever it is to the total number of birds that are there. It just, like, how it was already mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So we got off of the boat, successfully made it and did it all. We briefly had lunch at a nearby place where I had basically just a deep-fried hamburger patty. It was kind of interesting. And chips. And then we headed on the road down to Bird Fair. Yeah. But the little community of North Berwick is just absolutely charming.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's a lot to do, a lot of little restaurants. Like, it's a vacation community out on the Scottish coast that I would love to spend some more time at. There was one of the cool things that I noticed when we were at Bass Rock, because... you know, castles apparently are something that everybody in my family is fascinated with. But you can see on the mainland this just ancient castle that's in the distance. It's called Tan Tollen Castle, that is just like this huge ruins of one that I'd really like to go explore a little bit more. We drove past the entrance to it and we were like heading out. We needed to leave and I really wanted to be like, Eric, can we stop at this castle?
Take a look at this.
I need to climb around this castle a little bit. So there is just an absolutely amazing amount of stuff to do in Scotland that we didn't really get a check out. So we will definitely have to make a stop again to explore all of the cool things that it has to offer.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So we're definitely going back to Scotland again.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to plan more time.
Yeah.
The next time we go, 100% recommend, Bass Rock.
Yeah.
100% recommend staying in Edinburgh, in either Old Town or New Town. I mean, it's all walkable. It's all relatively close. Staying at the Royal Mile is where we stayed, and I definitely recommend doing that. And recommend setting enough alarms that you wake up and don't miss half of the first day that you're there.
Seriously.
But I think we had a great cram-packed little bit of time in Scotland, and I'm looking forward to maybe bird fair next year. We'll plan some extra days at the end, so then maybe it doesn't get messed up with the flights, and spend some more time, maybe go into central or western Scotland a little bit,
maybe like fly into Glasgow or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even that much further than Edinburgh, but
it's not,
but maybe yeah.
Yeah.
Some options. There's options of places to fly into once you get over to Europe.
Yep.
So awesome. We did it. We went out there. We saw Bass Rock. We saw Edinburgh. And we talked about it.
Yeah.
So thank you guys. Sort of. So thank you guys all for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and or learned something new. Please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Music, and anywhere else you listen to us. If you would like to connect with us on the socials, you can follow us at Hannah Goes Birding and Eric Goes Birding on Instagram. You can follow our Facebook page at Hannah and Eric Go Birding, or email us at hannahandericgobirding@gmail.com. Check out our website, www.gobirdingpodcast.com. And really anywhere that we're on social media is Hannah and Eric Go Birding or something like that.
Yeah, and help us share the love of birding with your friends.